Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I will select a nominee worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy of excellence and decency. While I've been studying candidates' backgrounds and writings, I've made no decision except one. The person I will nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, character, experience, and integrity. And that person will be the first black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court. It's long overdue, in my view.
That's President Biden today during the retirement announcement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, confirming he will nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court. He says he's sticking to his campaign promise. This will be an historic selection with all eyes on the eventual nominee, but that is just the beginning in the politically charged climate that is the U.S. Senate. Nothing is simple or assured. Joining me to talk about this are Mary C. Curtis, columnist for Roll Call, and Dr. Niambi Carter, political science professor here at Howard University and author of American While Black. Lines are open. Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mary, Dr. Carter, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you.
So get out your popcorn, your juju bees, and your milk duds, because this is going to be one to watch. Okay, it is a foregone conclusion. The president said it today. Yes, he's going to nominate a black woman. That's the easy part, Dr. Carter. What's the hard part going forward?
I think it's going to be to find a nominee who will be pleasing to both the Democrats and the Republicans, in part because we know that the Democrat coalition is not in lockstep with one another. So I think that's going to be the hardest part. I think confirming the nominee will be pretty straightforward, but I think finding the right nominee is going to be the difficult part.
Your thoughts about that, Mary?
Well, I think that, even though the Democratic coalition hasn't held together, we see for the filibuster, that those two senators, Senator Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, have voted pretty much for President Biden's judicial nominees. And even though he's been criticized in some quarters on other issues, the president has confirmed quite a few judges, and half of his first 16 nominees for federal appeals courts have been black women who've been woefully underrepresented. I do think that Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, has talked about, I don't want him to nominate someone from the radical left. But because of the rules that McConnell put in place, that you only need a simple majority instead of a filibuster-proof majority to get judges on the court, and he squeezed three judges on there under President Trump, it looks like if the Democrats hold together, that they will indeed be able to get a justice on the court. Now, I agree with the professor that they will be looking at certain justices, and just because a justice has got Republican support to get on the appeals court, on a federal court, doesn't mean that they will get any Republicans on their side. But we see, that this has been a trend going on for a while. It used to be the justices would get overwhelming support from the Senate that was bipartisan. But more and more, we see that it has been politicized, and it is a partisan exercise.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Supreme Court. President Biden said he will nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court. It would be an historic pick. What do you think? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. I must say, as an aside, and I think there are a lot of people who would agree with me, and I'd like to have your opinions about this as well, that when you just look at, allow me, at the magnificent blackness of these women, that you do not see, these women do not play basketball, they don't sing, They don't dance. There are no cameras in the courtrooms for these high-level jurists. And if you don't end up in their courtroom, you may not know that they are there. They are not part of pop culture. But when we've seen these photographs, you know, Michelle Childs, Holly Thomas, Candace Jackson, Akinwumi, Leandra Kruger, Ketanji Brown Jackson, all of these possibles who sit on some of the highest court positions in the land. As a person of color, you know, Dr. Carter, your heart has to swell.
Of course it does. I mean, I think the fact that we have waited this long, right, to see a black woman potentially make it to that court is a shame on us, you know, as a country. And then the fact that the court is just less diverse than this country is, right? I mean, it's still majority white, a majority men. And you notice, you know, it's never been a case where we've had two black people on the court at the same time, right? I mean, it's been a long time coming. So absolutely, I mean, we salute the brilliance of these black women. And I think there's like so many others in their professions, whether they be journalists or physicians or professors or whatever, who labor in obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
Most people won't ever know them. And I think at least at this moment, I think, you know, we're really talking about representation here, not just, you know, that these women are eminently qualified, but that representation matters. And having a vision of who you could be and who you could ascend, where you could ascend, right, I think is really important. And we don't have enough of this. I mean, the legal profession is still overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly white. And so these women are not just the cream of their professions, right? They're one of the few in their profession, and who the idea that in just a few short months, right, we could have black women on the Supreme Court, I think means so much to so many of us who never thought we would see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mary?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, like both of you have talked about, this is excellence, and it's not that it hasn't been there. I mean, President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, appointed in 1966 Constance Baker Motley, the first black female federal judge, and she was excellent, and she could have been a nominee to the Supreme Court, but it wasn't even considered. So I find ringing hollow some of these pushbacks saying, well, will they be qualified? Well, look, they are all eminently, as you have all said, qualified. They are excellent, and you know, it is, I have to say, you know, I'm a journalist, but I am swelling with pride because, you know, black women have been the core, the base of the Democratic Party. And you could say, arguably, because of the activism in Georgia and elsewhere, there is a reason why there is a Senate majority, slim though it is, and they will be able to get this person on the court. And I will have to say, even though he got a lot of support, President Barack Obama, there was among some black women a thought that he should have named a black woman to the court.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are saying, yes, it is overdue and it is about time. And there are, of course, an incredible list, as you say, of qualified, terrific women who will add to it. And it will be interesting because Justice Clarence Thomas is the black person on the court, but many would say that he really hasn't represented in many cases a lot of the issues on the same side of many African Americans in this country.
Yeah.
And this justice will get to weigh in on issues of affirmative action and police reform, guns, so many other things. And it will be totally interesting to see how the court interacts with this new dynamic on it.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the nomination of a black woman to the Supreme Court, President Biden saying he is going to keep his campaign promise to do that. Let's go to Sergeant Wells calling from Clinton, Maryland. Thanks for calling, Sergeant. What's on your mind?
Well, it's okay. It's a great thing that, you know, black women were chosen, that she was chosen because...
Well, no one has been chosen yet. Let's be clear.
Well,
no one has been chosen yet, but go ahead.
She's nominated. But to be nominated because she's black, I don't agree with that. I think she should be nominated to do a job and that she's capable of doing it. And it should not be based upon her race.
Okay.
Or his race. That's how I feel.
Let's drill down a little bit on that, Dr. Carter.
Well, look, I think we do all this hand-wringing is when it comes to non-white people and non-male people, quite frankly. These women, no one, I mean, let's be clear, there are no qualifications, actually, to be a Supreme Court justice. You do not have to be a jurist, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is this idea that because someone said, we need representation on the court, and in this particular moment, we're going to pursue a nominee who is looking more like the country, because this country is becoming browner, right, is becoming less white, that therefore that means that person can't be qualified. I mean, the idea that Brett Kavanaugh or Neil Gorsuch or John Roberts are qualified simply because they're white men. Now, no one ever maybe said, I'm going after them because they're white men, but no one also second guesses the qualifications of white men because there's nothing special about them. They're no more qualified than anyone else that could have potentially been picked at the moment because there are no qualifications. But we have this notion that when we say, I'm going to go for the person who is this identity or of this representation, that therefore that means they are of lesser quality. And I think we need to interrogate what that means, because saying that I'm going to try to put together an institution that more accurately reflects this country because we know it matters and how people deliberate, how people read the law, how people make decisions. I don't know why that's any less credible than any other reason. I mean, we can pretend all day long that this is just about merit, but we absolutely know it's about more than that. And this is not to say, I mean, let me be very clear, all of the women's names that are being circulated are eminently qualified, if not better qualified than some of the people who were on that court. They have clerked for Supreme Court justices. They have gone to the best law schools in this country. They have every credential that anyone else who we think of as qualified for the court would have. But the fact that someone said, I'm going to make sure that it's a black woman, then all of a sudden all of that goes out of the window and we're doing all this hand-wringing about, well, I don't want to be selected just because she's black. She has to be good. They're black and a woman, and they're excellent at what they do.
Mm. Mary?
I really agree with Dr. Carter. I think a problem is the default in this country has always been white. Mm-hmm. It's just unsaid. And so as she was pointing out, you know, when we talk about all the other Supreme Court justices, the fact that they are all, most of them have been white isn't because they looked into the pool and found who was the best, because certain people just were never on the list. So that's the point of affirmative action. It's just broadening the list, because there are so many people, as I've said before, who were eminently qualified. But we often have just that default that white is what everyone lands on. And so, as I said, and as she said, you know, these are people who could have been on the court for many years.
Yeah.
African-American women, more African-American men, of all races, genders, and so forth. And I remember looking at the hearings when they were interviewing the Senate, Sonia Sotomayor, who's now on the court. And here's this justice who had been to, I believe, Yale Law School, and she was eminently qualified. And so many of them were talking down to her,
mm-hmm.
some of the white male senators who did not have the qualifications she had. And I really recall that, and I thought, oh, this black woman is really going to have to go through the ringer, because I can understand that it's a reflexive, it seems, reaction to many white men to drill down and say, are you really qualified? Let's just see. Let's interrogate in ways that they really did not do at all for the Alitos, for Brett Kavanaugh, for Neil Gorsuch, and so forth. And so I definitely agree with Dr. Carter.
Yeah. Sergeant Wells, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shaka calling from Virginia. I want to talk to you. Please do not hang up because we are about to take a break. And I encourage you to give us a call. Tell us what you think about, shall I say, a pending historic moment in the history of the Supreme Court. President Biden saying that he will keep a campaign promise and nominate a black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you think? We're going to be talking about the politics as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone calls as we are going to be taking your calls, as always, all the way up until 8 o'clock. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insights segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. We will continue on SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. Stretches in for John Mons with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about President Biden saying that he's going to keep his campaign promise and nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court, this coming after the official retirement announcement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer today. We continue our conversation with Mary C. Curtis, columnist with a Roll Call, and joining us now, political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson. Stay. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shaka, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You're welcome, Mr. Fisher. How are you? One of your guests already touched on it. I was a little bit respectfully disagree when the lady said it will be a problem to find a qualification woman. I just want to say all these women are 10 times way beyond qualified. Let me make this. Out of 109 justices in America, 41 of them are male. They're not even qualified, but they go there because of their skin. To me, Amy Coney Barrett, nobody. Question is qualification. Just like MSNBC, CNN, why when it comes to black women, people question the qualification? These black women, they're 10 times qualified than the counterpart in that Supreme Court. I said, put them there. They're amazing women, and they're qualified. Today is my happiest day in the United States to see a woman, somebody who look like me, 10 times way qualified. It won't be any problem to find a black woman who is qualified. Those women are qualified, and they should be in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to say. And I'm happy for Joe Biden. He make me happy, but we want John Lewis voting right bill to pass also. It doesn't mean when you put a black woman in the Supreme Court, you take care of the voting rights. No, you have to pass the voting rights because John Lewis beaten blood for voting rights. So this is just the job beginning. We have more jobs to get done in the United States as a young black man, as an immigrant. Thank you,
okay.
Mr. Fisher.
Shaka, thank you so much for your comments. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. First, I wanted to thank Dr. Niambi Carter for her participation in this conversation, as always. And joining us now, of course, Dr. Sharice Nelson. Dr. Nelson, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me, Harold. Happy New Year to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you sound fit and fine and ready to fight, as always.
Well, you know me. I'm always ready to fight. And based upon your caller's, Shaka's response coming in, I think she's totally right. And I speak about the level of inequality that we see inside of the justice system, but in particular inside of our congressional system. In my new book, The Congressional Black Caucus, 50 Years of Fighting for Equality. And so I agree with her totally. There are black women who are capable and who are have been overqualified that are now ready for this post. The question for me is confirmation, right? We got Ms. Clark to become the head of the Civil Rights Division, but it required a tie-breaking vote. So the question really becomes, even if this black woman is put up, whatever black woman is put up for the post, are they going to be able to get confirmed in this Senate?
So let me ask you about that, because I've been thinking about that since yesterday. Despite what we saw with Brett Kavanaugh, okay, because that, for whatever reasons, the allegations of sexual assault when he was a much younger man, his confirmation process was rough. Now, Amy Coney Barrett, not so much, as well as Neil Gorsuch, not so much. But a lot of Republicans are still smarting over Brett Kavanaugh. However, this is not Build Back Better. This is a black woman nominated to the Supreme Court, whomever she may be. Do you believe, Dr. Nelson, that any Republican would dare be on the wrong side of history to vote against or to show up during a confirmation process bristling during questioning?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind they would do it. Susan Collins is the only one who voted for Mrs. Clark to take over the Civil Rights Division in the Department of Justice.
But that's different from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but it when it comes to black women, no. Loretta Lynch during for your viewers who don't necessarily
remember,
dive into this.
Yeah.
Right, or dive into this, right? Me and Dr. Carter, we do this for a living. So I don't have an expectation for the listeners to be watching like we're watching. But let's remember that Loretta Lynch could not get confirmed as the head of the Department of Justice, and Eric Holder stayed in the place. It took some of her sorority sisters in Delta. It took almost, I think, 180 days just to get her a hearing for the confirmation process. Let's remember the fact that Ms. Clark, needed this tiebreaker to then become the head of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. Let's remember that the historic denying of Lonnie Grenier years before in the Clinton years. Let's remember that that one of the legs of the filibuster, as far as being able to filibuster judicial appointees, failed during the Obama years because they couldn't get enough black women to be appointed in the federal justice process, meaning that they were not able to get enough black women or enough black people, period, inside of the a place to be even in the contention for to be a Supreme Court justice, because there has to be some level of federal experience, or it suggested there be some level of federal experience, or you sat on the highest court in the state, in your state, meaning that you sat on then the Supreme Court inside of your state. And so we are struggling with having enough black women in any of those positions. And so if this idea of qualification is being brought because there's not enough women even in the pool. So yes, I do believe that Republicans have no problem standing up and looking like fools in history and not confirming a black woman. Absolutely.
Mary?
I think that it's going to be political. As your last caller talked about, she said, well, we still need voting rights, and some people would say police reform. And I think the Biden administration is seeing this as a chance to get a win, because it has had some setbacks as well as some successes. But they're also seeing that this is a chance to energize the base and see, we need more support so we can do things like this, so we can name a black female justice to the Supreme Court. But unfortunately, I think that Republicans will use it as a chance to basically, before you can already see, before they've even named anybody, they're trying to paint them with a radical brush. And then they are going to use it. And we do know that there are conservative groups that are digging into the backgrounds of every one of the black women on this list, so they can basically demonize these people, put them through a ringer during a process, and they also want to use this politically to appeal to their base, which right now the Republican Party is the party of Trump. So we know what that's about. So they won't. Will they go against a black woman? For sure, because in some quarters that will play very well with the base. You can see what they're already saying on places like Fox News about trying to paint this person as an affirmative action hire and as a bigger problem with society. So unfortunately, we're not at the point where people used to be confirmed by 97-3. Now everything is a battle and a chance to make political points. And so I definitely think that's true. I mean, and you know, people are even saying, why did he say a black woman? Well, remember Ronald Reagan, when he was running and it had problem with the women's votes, said, I'm going to name a woman to the Supreme Court, and he named Sandra Day O'Connor, and nobody took offense at that.
Right.
But only now are they doing this because it's Biden and because, let's face it, it is a black woman.
Let me go
and
to...
Go
ahead.
And to follow up with that, the reason that Joe Biden made such a promise is because black women are voting inside of the Democratic Party at over 90%. So this, to my colleague's point here on the call, the reason that a black woman in particular was named because of the support that black women have given the Democratic Party time in and time out. And we saw this when it came to Alabama with Doug Jones.
Yes.
So this was a direct response to say, black women, we see you, and we are going to get you some level of representation on the highest court in the land.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Erica, calling from D.C. Erica, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just want to clear up a couple of things. I believe that one of the speakers said, and I'm driving, so I may not have my facts right, but there was a time when there was an overlap of two black Supreme Court justices because Thurgood Marshall died in 1993. Clarence Thomas was appointed in 1991. If I remember correctly. Two, I'm glad the previous caller mentioned about Lonnie Grenier, who just passed away, because she, you know, she had qualifications. And some of the narratives I'm hearing on the news is about this woman will be the first woman, but Lonnie Grenier was one of the first women nominated for, you know, Supreme Court, but, you know, it got derailed as it was mentioned by the previous caller. But the final thing is that it really will take people, all those people who consider voting in presidential elections, also voicing their opinions with the senators in their individual states in order to build support and to show that there is support for this, because there will be opposition. It may not be couched in the color of someone's skin, but there'll be something else that will be brought up in order to make the process difficult.
Well, but understand, to your point about there was no overlap, because while Thurgood Marshall died in 93, he retired in 91.
Okay.
They were not on the court at the same time. And George Herbert Walker Bush, the first Bush, replaced Marshall with Thomas.
Correct.
Okay. So
which was a slap in the face to the justice, in my honest and humble opinion, that it was a slap in the face to Thurgood Marshall and everything that he achieved as an NAACP lawyer for many of years.
Yeah. So, but Erica,
thank you for the correction.
Oh, hey, that's what we're here for. Thank you, Erica. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ethan, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Mr. Fisher?
Yep.
Good evening to you and your panel.
Good evening. And, go right ahead.
Well, thank you. I would like to just say it's kind of ironic. It's a travesty that we're coming into this, if you will, in the middle. In the middle. What I mean by that is black women that has educated themselves, been through it, they should have been in those positions all along. So it's kind of baffling to me why that question has not been brought up yet.
What do you mean specifically? What's the question?
The question is, well, my statement first off is that no one has mentioned that black women should have been in this position all along. That's never even been discussed during this whole conversation. So that's what I mean by when we say they're being nominated now. To me, that's like in the middle. They should have already been there.
Well, I think Dr. Nelson did mention that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I might have been calling in or what have you at that time.
That's quite all right. And I don't have to defend Dr. Nelson. She's perfectly capable of doing that herself.
And I think I also talked about Constance Baker Motley, the first black female federal judge in 1966, who could have been nominated to the Supreme Court, but her career ended there because there was a glass ceiling, as there has been for black women in these positions. And I think your caller is correct. If things had been equal and even, all of these people, our courts would be much more diverse now, just because the best people would have been on them. But how it's been.
Yeah, Ms. Curtis, like I said, you know, like I stated before, it's a shame that that Justice, you know, that Lonnie Grenier has passed away before this announcement, because the level of scrutiny and torture, honestly, that she went through during those Clinton years, I mean, it's just unforeseen. What black women have to go through even to be considered for these positions is untenable and unheard of. We are now discussing the academic backgrounds of some of these women that are on the short list, saying that the only ones that are potentially qualified are those who've attended Ivy League institutions. And I think that's ridiculous to even be having that conversation. So we know that black women are vetted and scrutinized at the highest threshold in this country, and that is because when it comes to understanding what is American, it has always been centered around whiteness.
Yes, and it's interesting because I think that's one of the reasons that Congressman Majority Whip Clyburn has been talking about Judge J. Michelle Childs in South Carolina, because she went to she didn't go to Ivy League schools, and he's saying, you know, that's a good thing. She came from a working class background. She went to state schools, and that's diversity as well.
And she's been on the federal bench since 2010, right?
Yeah.
And this is, I think, the other point that I think people have to understand is that when you go to the Supreme Court, you are in an appellate position. And what that means is that you are now comparing or conferring amongst a group of judges about the constitutionality of whatever the case is. That's different from being in trial court, where there is, the prosecution, the defendant, and then evidence is produced in such a way where there's this jury trial. When you get up to the Supreme Court, it's at an appellate level. So we're looking at the mindsets of not only where they've been educated, but their experiences in life. And that is why as you stated, Clyburn is looking at someone who has a different background, who can bring a different understanding of the law to the highest court in the land.
Yeah. Yeah. Ethan,
if I may, I'd like
go
to
ahead
say
real
one
quick.
Thing before. Okay, all I would like to say is God changes things. This is not the same world we used to live in. We have the corona and all of its variances. Everything is changing. This is, James Brown said, this is a man's world. This is God's world. For those that know what I'm saying, pray.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to have to pray through this process either way to support whoever the nominee is. Ethan, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I did want to talk about two things. First of all, Mary, the politics. Are Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema going to be problematic?
Well, you know, I am pretty hopeful. I think the Biden administration is hopeful, because even though there was pushback, of course, we saw on voting rights, they have pretty consistently voted for the judgeships that Biden has put forth. And Manchin just recently gave an interview to, I believe, a West Virginia station, in which he said that he's pretty sure that the judges, he would support a judge nominee that is more liberal than he is, because he said it would be pretty hard to be that he's pretty conservative as it goes. So he is open to that. And also, you know, Sinema is feeling the heat from her vote not to do away with the filibuster, and so she's looking to shore up her bona fides with the base that elected her in Arizona. So right now, I think, of course, they have to go through the process. They have to meet all of these people, and they interview them. But they have been pretty consistently voting for the president's judicial nominees. Mm-hmm. And I think he's hoping, trying to get some Republican support. We saw with Ketanji Brown Jackson that she did get for her last her position on the D.C. Circuit Court, that she got the support of, I believe, Murkowski, Susan Collins, and Lindsey Graham. But that doesn't mean that if push comes to shove and McConnell wants to play hardball, that we won't see something different.
I do want to talk about something else, what I would call the Michelle Obama factor. And this is what I mean by that. As Michelle Obama became first lady, and so many black women, and I would argue black men, saw her as not just the first black first lady, but one of us. She was like our parents, like us as parents, like us as neighbors, as church members, as best sister friends, and the like. One of the things that I think has gone unspoken, and that is so important when we talk about, you know, Dr. Nelson, for example, what representation really means on this court. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor is a prime example of that. Not only, you know, what did Drake say? He started at the bottom, now we're here. And there are so many people who can relate, so many women of color, so many Latinx people who can relate to Sonia Sotomayor. And I think that these black women, whoever is picked, there will be that same Michelle Obama factor, that like us factor that will be brought on to this court. That's something which makes it so much more historic that a court with a black woman on it will have a perspective that heretofore was never there.
Right, but let's also be clear that while and I don't want us to lose the historical moment and not get wrapped up in it, but let's still remember we're still on a very uneven court.
Even
if this black woman, you know, even once this black woman gets there, that she is going to be writing opinions most likely in the minority, right? She's not going to be writing opinions from a majority standpoint. And so I think that we have to remember, and we need to, citizens need to keep their finger on this and be calling their senators about this process, because if a black woman is not confirmed, we are, I think, deeply in trouble on that court. We need some, we don't need anyone else, in my opinion, but a black woman on that court. And not because it's their time or their turn. It is because black women.
It is time.
Well, but it's not even, it's bigger than, I think, time and turn. I think it has very much more to do with the nuance of understanding that black women who've now lived through, these black women have now in their careers, they've lived through economic downturns. They've lived through now a global pandemic. They are mothers. They are sisters. They are people who have had to caretake for people that are older. So their entire perspective is what's needed on that court.
That's exactly what I was saying. It is a black woman's perspective that is needed on that court, with the opportunity perhaps to influence those who are currently on the court that maybe never have considered that black person or black woman's perspective.
Yeah, I would like to talk about that
Clarence Thomas notwithstanding.
Yeah, I remember once I interviewed First Lady Michelle Obama, and she said, Mary,
sometimes I think that people don't think we exist. And
right.
In the sense of black women like us, just, you know, working class who worked hard and achieved. And she did represent so much more. And to your point, just point about influencing people, Sandra Day O'Connor, who I mentioned, said that talking with Thurgood Marshall and becoming friends with him after not really being exposed to that many folks of color in her life made her see things from a different perspective. So those conversations. And remember, this person, yes, it will just be replacing Breyer. It'll still be a 6-3 court. But Breyer was, I believe, 80. He is 83 years old.
83.
This is going to be a younger woman, obviously a different perspective, who will have many years on the court. And so it will shift, in a sense, the conversation. It has to. And so, yes, while people should not expect that everything will twist and turn around and it will be a liberal perspective on the court that will change everything when it comes to affirmative action and voting and guns and these other issues and reproductive rights, it will change the dynamic, definitely. And as I said, you know, when Michelle Obama said that, I just knew exactly what she was talking about, that there was a sense that the world hadn't seen someone like her as representing black women, but black people did relate to it, as Dr. Nelson said. They saw these people in their churches, in their schools, in their neighborhoods, and it was a relief.
Yes.
I think that was my point. My point was that to your listeners that this perspective is needed, but let's not forget that we may not see the immediate gains of that perspective.
Oh, yeah.
That we
oh,
are
yeah,
still
I get
at a
it.
6-3. I guess that was my point that I was trying to make, was that we're still at a 6-3 court. And I oftentimes think that when we have these historic moments, there is this unreasonableness about the change that's going to come immediately from it. And so I guess what I'm saying is, and I want, you know, your listeners to walk away with is, yes, it's time. Yes, the perspective needs to be shifted. And we need to think about this in a long-term perspective on what it will do, not what it's going to do with the court's docket as it is currently.
Yeah. Well, black women already have so much on their shoulders. To expect them to change with one fell swoop the Supreme Court is way too heavy a burden.
That's a real black girl magic right there.
I know. That's like black girl really superhero magic. So I'm hoping they'll come on my Equal Time podcast, though. I'm putting it out into the universe, so I want to talk with them.
but that goes back to the point that I was asking earlier. And you make an interesting point, Dr. Nelson, because you said if this does not happen, and my point is, I dare this civil war in the Senate to be on the wrong side of history. Because I think that even Mitch McConnell may very well say, he may be, and he's very deft at picking his battles, this is a battle that he may just say, let's take an L on this and get this done. Because I think that there may be... this isn't 1994. This is not Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas. This is not Lonnie Grenier. This is a different situation, and the world is very, very different now. And I just think that it is time, and I think that, and I hope that the Republicans will see the writing on the wall, and allow this to happen, because the qualified women are definitely there.
Yeah, and I guess I'll leave you with this. I'm not saying that it's not time. I'm not saying that it's not going to impact or not influence. As a researcher, I look at what's available to me, and the Clark confirmation process was a brutal one. And without the filibuster, when it came to judicial nominees and confirmation nominees, without that process, without that filibuster being gone,
she would not have been
the first black woman to then head up that DOJ Civil Rights Division. And so, again, I know what I feel, but I have to, as a researcher, be aware of the of what the data is saying in front of me. And she was confirmed 51-48.
Also, you have a lot of these hardline conservative senators, the Josh Hawleys, the Ted Cruzes, who are looking to 2024 and maybe being presidential contenders, and they'll see this as an opportunity to make some speeches against the leftists and so forth, and door themselves up with that conservative base that's going to be picking the candidates. So maybe some will come over, but I don't know. I think you're giving quite a few of them too much credit when they'll see it as a chance to score some political points.
Well, as long as Sinema and Manchin and the rest of the Democratic coalition stays the course, the Republicans aren't needed. So there's that. We will have to see. When this happens, Dr. Nelson, call me.
And Harold, you know I will.
I know you will. Oh, gosh. Mary C. Curtis and Dr. Sharice Nelson, thank you so much for your input. Love to have you on the program. Also,
oh, thank you.
We want to thank you. Dr. Niambi Carter for participating in the conversation earlier. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, January 27th, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.